name is Koki, Institute for Quantum Optics. And
used to be.
Yeah.
No, used to be. Okay.
Used to be.
What should I say is university?
University of Geneva.
Oh, it's good. Lucky that way. Okay.
Okay.
Excellent. Wonderful.
I didn't put it, so it's my fault.
Our resident expert on all things in traffic, but traffic is in the air.
Okay, well, thanks for the nice introduction, and thanks very much for inviting me. It's really a pleasure to be here and to speak. So, yes, I will present something a bit different, and it's a joint work with Yorgos Eftaxias and Roger Kolbeck, and it's on joint measurements in box world. And it doesn't sound so causal, but I try to convince you first that you should care about this nevertheless. So let's see if I succeed. Okay. So what do we often want to do? Well, we want to understand correlations in causal structures, in networks, okay? And so the Bell scenario is, of course, the most common one that we have. But as we go further, I would argue that as soon as we have more than one source, which, okay, are the latent variables in the classical case or these quantum systems that we've seen, we should care more and more also about joint measurements. Because as soon as you have two sources, what will happen is that, okay, they can send systems to a party. So imagine this is Alice, Bob, and Charlie, and usually inputs and outcomes. Now, of course, Bob gets two systems, and he can do something non-trivial on those. So for instance, we know in the quantum case, he can do an entangled measurement and do entanglement swapping. And this is something that you can use also technologically if you build quantum repeaters and these things. And so what happens here, which here is not so much the case yet, is that really these joint measurements start playing a role. And so this is something I want to understand. Now, I've told you about the quantum case. Of course, this is not enough to say why I'm studying this in box world. But for this, it's good to go to a correlation picture. So if we just look at, for the both networks that we have here, we look at the behaviors of outputs given input. This is kind of the standard pictures we have with classical probability theory, quantum theory, and then anything non-signaling, which one theory that achieves everything there is box world. But then if we go to another network, now kind of the picture becomes much more interesting, I would say, because now we have, okay, we have still that in some ways quantum is more powerful than classical, than box world, because a subcausal structure of the network I showed you is still the Bell scenario, and if we ignore the third party or the second source, of course, this is something that plays in. But now we also get network conditions. And these somehow allow us, so the adaptive CHSH game is something we introduced there, and this now allows us to have situations also where, for instance, the theory of box world, which here is always strictly more powerful than quantum, is not anymore. Okay, and so somehow this points that there is sometimes a trade-off also between having a very general state space, which box world has, and having general measurements, which it's obviously lacking in this case. Okay, and yes.
Sorry, Miriam, can I just ask to add, in trying to persuade us that joint measurements are relevant, is another way of thinking about that is in causal inference, classical causal inference, we talk about the correlations induced by post-selecting on a collider. And here your joint measurement on the two lambdas is really post-selecting on this common effect.
Yes.
So that's sort of the connection to causal inference.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And yes. Okay. And I think this is in some sense interesting because it gives us new tools to also analyze questions in quantum foundations. So what I think there are many things one can care. What I personally care about is that I think it gives us new ways to attack the physical principles underlying quantum theory, because these have always been built by kind of restricting the allowed correlations to quantum by saying other theories are somewhat unnatural. Here you can now ask, well, in what sense is quantum optimal? So if you go to a network, you can do new things there. And I think this is a new approach. And for this, we need to understand, on the one hand, these networks and causality, but also specifically the joint measurements. So for me, this is the motivation why I want to study this, because then also, I mean, you can do an experimental test if you have that quantum is actually extremal. I think this is an important question. There is also a more pragmatic motivation that one can have, So one class of measurements that Boxworld has all of them is what we call wirings. So this just means that if you hold maybe systems that you can measure, and you can have several choices of measurement. So for instance, you can have two choices, let's say 0 and 1. What you can do is you can, depending on some value, you can decide which measurement you perform. You get an outcome. You use this to choose the next one. You get an outcome. And then in the end, you create a final outcome, OK? And from this, you can get a new conditional distribution of A given X from these. And there are many ways in which you can do this. So in a wiring, you also choose which device, if you have several, to choose in which order. But this is a very natural class of operations, because you can do them nicely in a lab, no matter what your theories. Also, if you have quantum systems, you can pre and post process your things. And so this is, in some sense, an added benefit, that when you characterize these measurements in Boxworld, you also characterize these wirings that you can use. OK, so much to the motivation. Now I want to say briefly, what is Boxworld? So what do we have there? So what we imagine usually is that a single system is just a conditional distribution, where I have a choice of inputs I can make and a choice of outcomes. Now, the kind of extremal states I can then have are the ones that, for each of the measurements, give me either 0 or 1 with probability 1. And this is what this notation here says. So this is first measurement gives me outcome 0 with probability 1, and second measurement as well in this case. And these are the extremal states, and then the state space is the convex hull. OK, and then measurements I can do in this case turn out to be, so what we want for measurements is that they are just functionals to probabilities of our states. And so in this case, what turns out is that kind of the extremal ones are picking measurement 0 or picking measurement 1. And then you have two effects or two measurement functionals, essentially, that build those. There is always the possibility of take the 0 effect. And there is a unit, which now, because I've chosen this somewhat redundant representation, because we have normalization, so now there are a kind of two representations here of the same thing. Yes?
What is signaling versus non-signaling?
So, so non-signaling here. So what this means is that it is, I think Rob introduced it this morning. So if you have, for instance, you think you have space-like separated parties, you want for instance, Alice's choice cannot affect a space-like separated variable that Bob holds. Okay, because otherwise you would have problems with special relativity, because you could turn it into intermediate influences, no? And so it's saying, essentially, in the network picture, it's saying that, if you have this graph, okay, then there is no causal link from these to this one. And physically, you assume that you do put them space-like separated. So you kind of think the assumption is natural to have this. So OK, what it would mean here, if you have a distribution of AB given XY.
You mean XY given AB.
Yeah, you have A and B in your draft.
Wait. Yes, this happens. if I sum over this, OK, I have the marginal on Y. This should not depend on A. So this would be P. Y given V. So it's essentially an independent assumption, and these are called non-signaling conditions.
Maybe just say one more thing, that not only would X conditionally independent marginally independent V be a no-signaling, but X conditionally independent V given A would also be considered a no-signaling. So it's a jargon for the conditional independence relations that hold in this cell. For this specific graph, yeah. And perhaps you're going to introduce them for bilocality as well, but no, not right now.
No. Okay, but no, actually, yeah. Okay, you can have it three-partite as well. So you could even have here, maybe this is. Uh, Okay, you could have a third party that is also linked to the source, and then you would want conditions here that also make sure that this cannot signal to any of the others. So you'd have the conditions among all the parties and all pairs of parties.
Okay, it's just a physicist's way of saying condition dependence in space.
In this network, yes, yeah.
Although there is one extra independence in this, like A independent of B marginal, which would not be called
okay.
the no signaling
yes.
condition. It would instead be called measurement independence. So that's the one caveat. Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Okay. So then yes, and so then you go to multipartite systems. Where now okay, now we've discussed what these are. So the joint states. In this theory are just all possible non-signaling distributions that you could have. So one example here is this would be the PR box. Well, actually, it's wrong. So I meant to do this the other way around. Okay, this is just a state you can have. So this is the same notation as here. Now, just because there is a second measurement, there is a new dimension. Okay, and I again denote all the probabilities. So this is both measurements are zero, and then all four probabilities that I can have, I just write there. And effects, again, then are all the linear functionals to probabilities. And one example would be this one, which is, again, a unit effect. Okay, because for any state here, these four will sum to one. And so on any state, this effect gives you one, and so this is the definition of the unit effect. It's like the identity measurement in quantum theory. Okay, so the way you would evaluate this is vectorize those and take them. Okay, and now what we want to do is characterize those measurements essentially.
If I'm understanding correctly, this is just this inner product notation. It's another way of representing the sums. CI constraints, I'm representing with inner products. That's all. Is this right? Nothing fancy.
No, now I'm saying. Okay, I put this overall distribution. I lost white. Oh, I changed them again. Okay, so I have all the elements. I can put them in a vector up to P11. Okay, and now I say, now I want to find here an inner product with the effect. So with the unit, it will be 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0. OK, and then here I take the product.
Yeah, so
and this is what I denote.
You're just writing this equation, so?
No, but you could.
But this is not the same as this, right? Is that what you, I thought you meant to say that this is a non-signaling condition, but it's not the same.
So then I'm not following. So what are, can you say again?
So the effect is a different element. And I'm telling you that, okay, so when you are in the quantum case, no? When you do a measurement, you take a state, and you take a measurement operator, and then you take an inner product between these.
Okay,
now in this case, I have a state, I have a measurement operator, and I take an inner product of these to get my outcome probabilities. This is what I'm saying. And so in this case, I'm just asking about kind of the marginals of the state. So here I'm summing elements of the state, whereas here I'm kind of multiplying it with a measurement operator. So in this case, this will mean doing the identity measurement.
So you could have other numbers than just one. You could have one half.
Yes, yes. I could have also, for instance, one. I could have this, for instance.
So a set of all measurements I can perform, all subsets.
Yes, so in the first place, it's just the measurement operator separately. So I've not told you now which go together into a measurement, right? You need them to sum to an identity measurement for them to make a measurement. But they're essentially, I'm characterizing the set of measurement operators in a way that you could have. Okay, and what they have to satisfy to be valid, well, the maximal set you can have is just anything that maps any of your states to a probability.
So,
okay.
I guess what was not clear also is that you don't have a complete measurement. It's just
one measurement operator, but I don't know if
yeah, that's what I said. No,
it's one measurement operator and not a complete measurement. So you have a detector, and then you have an output, and one output, which may happen with probability, let's say, 1/2, corresponds to this operator E. Okay, but then you have what happens the other half of the time, right? So you need to find a complete set of operator E to describe all what can happen. So this E just represents a potential output with some probability. So it's a measurement operator.
So you're talking about a set of E's that just gives you the whole ones?
So then,
look, you can see it here. There is one measurement operator, and this would be identity minus that one is that one, right? So together, these two make a measurement. So if you have a state, there will be a probability here and a probability here. Overall, if you apply this, you get a probability. If you apply this, you get a probability, and overall they sum to one. Okay, so these two make a measurement. And now in the bipartite case, you have exactly the same. So what you could have is one that had this one, only a one here, with only a one here, with only a one here, with only a one here. So you'd have a four outcome measurement. If you apply this to any state, now in this case, the first one would give you probability 1/2, and the fourth one, and the other ones give you probability 0. So this would be a valid measurement. Okay, and you compute it exactly by taking the, so this would be the first one actually. Okay. Yes.
I think it was something I hoped to put in the tutorial, but in the end couldn't.
Okay.
I had mentioned sort of classical causal models, conditional probabilities, and then this quantum generalization that replaced those conditional probabilities with these operators. So the framework here is there's something that's kind of post-quantum called generalized probabilistic theories, and it's yet another way you could generalize classical causal models beyond quantum theory. And so these, instead of the quantum states and then the quantum measurements, you have these more general objects that are vectors in a real vector space. And so I just thought I would mention that you can think of all this as sort of, although we don't usually, you can think of it as another kind of causal model where it's the parameters that are changing. They're not conditional probabilities, they're not quantum states, there's something even more general than that. But at the end of the day, every computation you make about observed probabilities is going to have to come out as a valid probability distribution, so that those constraints are in there. So Miriam, I just wanted to say that because I feel bad I wasn't in the tutorial.
Okay, well, I think we should maybe go on because I think I have only 10 minutes left, and anyway, this is like the third slide. So, okay, so anyway, if you want to learn more, so the whole theory is described in this paper, and then there are already results about the measurements which I actually want to characterize, right? So there is a result in this one actually that for two parties, two inputs and two outputs, which is all I've described so far with the example, all kind of effects you make in the end when you make measurements out of them, these will be wirings. So the type of measurement I've shown before. If you have three parties, and this is in this last paper about strong non-locality, you can have more. So there was at least one measurement that you cannot write as a wiring. So there is more interesting stuff coming up as soon as you go to three parties, essentially. Okay. And so now what I actually want to talk about is, I mean, implicitly we have characterized here what these effects are, but we want to explicitly characterize them and then see what they can do. Okay, so what we want to do is for different parties, inputs and outcomes, we want to characterize what types of measurements we have, and kind of the flavor of it already shows if we just have three parties. Namely, there is a type, wiring type, that makes up wirings. There is another type where the effects are also 0-1 valued, so deterministic. And then there is a whole class of other measurements where this is not the case. So if you think of the quantum case, you can think of an analogy between projectors and other POVM elements. Okay, so this is kind of what comes out of this characterization. Now what we found, and is kind of a reason why I chose this strange notation that is a bit redundant, is that actually what we found, the simplest way to characterize all the effects is to characterize all the representations of the unit effect first, which is also why I put two, because in a single system, there are two representations that are extremal. Okay, now in this case, well, you can have the four ones here. Of course, you could have put them here as well or here as well. And in total, there are 12 options. For n equal to 3, there are only 700,000, which is much better than characterizing all effects, which are various million. And so it gives us a handle a bit also on what we can build, because if we have this one, then we cannot never build anything that is not a wiring. And so it gives us a way to understand that. Okay. A fun fact, which I think we shouldn't discuss too much. There is a relation to logically consistent classical processes, but because I'm already behind, we're going to skip that. I think it's quite curious, but we can talk maybe in a coffee break if anyone is interested. Okay, now, how do we enumerate these things? Essentially, I said, well, we go via characterizing the units. There is an even simpler way for the deterministic part, so without the non-deterministic one. Namely, you can kind of just do non-signaling transformations. So you can write an algorithm that does you non-signaling transformations on these matrices, which, okay, this one just means you move two ones over. Or you could go with all of them, and then you can go down. So just moving pairs corresponds to this non-signaling transformation. Because what this implies is if you have two inputs, two outcomes, that sums of two probabilities have to be equal. So for the different A's in this case. Okay, so you can kind of shift your elements around. Okay, and so this is a way to even more easily kind of enumerate everything, which is what we did. And so you can do this also for higher dimensions and more parties. And what we can do with this is avoid the vertex enumeration, which can be costly. Okay, so now, these are just two examples. So in the now three-party, two-input, two-output case, now instead of just two measurements, we have three. So you can now imagine four matrices stacked. So this would be the top layer, second, third, and fourth, which corresponds to the third measurement varying. Okay? And now what you can do is you can do your non-signaling transformations, and you get a representation of the unit. And then you can, if you want the two-outcome measurement, you just bipartition. So you say half of the ones go into one effect and half of the ones go into the other. Now, this is an example of this, that it goes back to the unit. You can see if you shift those two up by non-signaling, those two over, and those two to the front, then you can see that you fill the top 2 by 2 by 2 block. And so this is equivalent. The sum of the two is equivalent to a unit effect. Okay, and essentially, this is equivalent to the one that was already known. So they had an 8 outcome measurement, but this is essentially coming from the same unit. So it's the same thing. Now, this is an example of one that is non-deterministic. I mean, it's just a bit more work to see that it reduces to a unit, which is not as nice, but OK. This also works. OK. So these are examples. And now, can I take 5 minutes for the application?
Sure.
Okay. So I choose some applications, and I also skip some more. But the first one is an application of the wirings, because I think these are kind of useful also if we just want to work in the quantum case. Because what you can do with those is what is called the still non-locality. And it's a problem that was introduced in this paper, so quite a while ago. And what you can imagine is, OK, you have your singlet. You measured it in the quantum case, and you take a second one and you measure it. Now the question is, if you've done this, you have kind of two instances of your system which have a certain, so maybe you took a different state here and you get a different CHSH value there if you do this. The question is, can I now choose a smart wiring here, one for Alice and one for Bob? So they do local things, but they get stronger correlations, which here I measure again with the CHSH value at the end. Okay, so can we strengthen the correlations by just doing wirings, which are very simple operations, so we don't need to like project on entangled subspaces or anything, you can just do it. Okay, and in this language of GPTs or of this box world, what this means is you take two states. Alice does a measurement on the two parts she holds, Bob does a measurement on the two parts he holds. Essentially, for each input, and then looks at the outcomes. Okay, and this will define again a behavior in this way. Okay, so this is non-locality distillation. Now, yes.
What is the answer to the question, can you achieve this goal?
Yes, you can. And actually, this was already known that you can in principle from several papers. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Now, what we looked is using kind of more partite operations, because it was always just kind of two boxes, two copies that were wired. Now we're kind of wiring three copies together because we have these three-party measurements. So Alice does a three-party measurement, a three-party wiring, and Bob does a three-party wiring instead of two. Okay, and so essentially what you can see here is that is help. Okay, this is just one example. This is now a section essentially through this common picture that we have here. So this is the PR box correlations. This is the distribution where for both outcomes, they are always perfectly correlated. So either both zero or both one. And then this is kind of just mixing you down to the maximally mixed box, going towards there until you hit the local boundary. Okay, so this is the kind of the cut we chose because it's an eight-dimensional space. Okay. Okay, and what we find is, okay, the brown here and the blue are the best two copy protocols that were already known, and I forgot to put the references here. I think they come later. And the green, so the whole green boundary is what this particular protocol can do. And so you can see that you can go further, and especially you can go into the quantum region quite a bit more. So this denotes the quantum region. Okay, and then you can choose, okay, different cross-sections where you don't have previous protocols, so you can pictorially see more easily that now we can do things we couldn't before because there you had nothing, and now with three copies you have something. Okay.
Yeah. So you are saying that by doing wirings over DHS8 protocols, you can improve the score.
Yes, so I'm saying yes. I don't know CHSH protocols, I guess you mean just having the usual thing. Yes, indeed. Okay, so this is an example. Okay, and then you can do more with it. You can also do sequential optimization and you can go beyond certain thresholds. This is kind of the paper that had the two protocols we saw on the last slide, but okay, we skipped this because of time. Okay, now what I want to just do one application as well of the non-wiring things. And one thing we can have is what is called non-locality without entanglement. This is known from the quantum case. So when you think of states, what you do to violate, for instance, Bell inequalities, you need an entangled state. Now, otherwise, if you have a separable state, you can do everything classically as well. If you go the other way and you share states, it's not that easy anymore, is what this shows. Because you can prepare product states, and it can be that to distinguish them, you need certain types of measurements. Now, in the case of measurements, they're not just entangled or separable, but there are global measurements that are not entangled. Okay, and this is what quantum theory has, and this is what has been quantified here as quantum non-locality without entanglement, essentially. Because you have non-locality in the sense that you need to do a global measurement, but there is no entanglement. Okay, so now what we found is that in BoxWorld you can have this as well, and it's actually very similar to the example from here. Well, one of the examples they have in the paper. You prepare copies, well, these are the states I mentioned at the beginning. You prepare these product states, and you can find here a measurement, which is in fact this this one that I've mentioned several times already, that also came in this strong non-locality paper. You can distinguish all of these perfectly, okay? Which you cannot do if you try to do a wiring. Okay, and so similarly, you have this non-locality without entanglement in this BoxWorld case. And what kind of also makes this interesting is that there have been claims in previous papers that you cannot, but we actually show that that's wrong, and actually you can do it as well. And it doesn't matter so much on the local properties, but it really just depends that you have those global measurements that you cannot implement in a kind of wiring or LOCC type way. Okay, there are more applications, but I will skip to the conclusions then. Okay, so essentially what we've done is characterized and enumerated the measurements in box world. Okay, so including the wirings that we know practically how to use, but also from the foundational perspective, maybe the others are more interesting. We also have various applications. I'm also happy to talk to you about other things we can apply them to in the week. I guess we have time. Two I've presented now. And I think what this gives us is kind of an understanding, because kind of an understanding of measurements, but specifically of the separable ones, because in box world you can only have separable measurements and no entangled measurements. And so specifically we have these global measurements, and by just analyzing them we can see essentially what you can do also without entanglement. What I think is the next step is then, well, to also look at entangled measurements more, so to try to analyze also in the GPT sense, maybe some example, which is harder to find, but one that has entangled measurements, to kind of make this more general. And for me, then, the long-term goal is to go towards these physical principles underlying quantum theory. And so for me, this is kind of why I'm doing this and why I'm going in this direction. Okay, and with this, I would like to thank you, and these are the references.
So at the very beginning, your motivation, it was about trying to pick out quantum theory from the landscape of all possible theories.
Yes.
By looking at more general situations where, you know, these alternative theories like box world are in some sense not including quantum theory. So there's things you can do in quantum theory that you can't do in box world, like entanglement as well.
Yeah.
So that reminds me of some work by John Barrett and Kieran Lee, where they were trying to sort of show that quantum theory was like optimal for computing, for example, because
okay.
It had this optimal balance between sort of entanglement in the state and entanglement in the measurements.
Mm-hmm.
And so is your project kind of in the same direction that it's, I think there is some precedent in a way to thinking about box world is less expressive than quantum theory, and so I'm just curious if you've thought about the connection to computation and...
Okay, I think yes. So I think on the one hand, yes, but then what you can see from kind of this program, so on the one hand, yes, I mean, here I've been pointing out this trade-off, and this is exactly what you're mentioning. Now, for computation, I think you can't do everything, because so what I have not mentioned at all here is, for instance, quantum theory over real Hilbert spaces. And there you can do computation, because you just have one universal qubit that controls everything. But if you go to the network, okay, it's not quite this adaptive CHSH game, but with a more complicated Bell inequality, you can actually distinguish the two, and you can do an experiment, which I believe with computation you couldn't reach. So I think the kind of... the gist of the idea, I agree, is the same, but I think I believe that with networks you can go even a step further.
I have a quick question, if it's okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Miriam, so I think this is a brilliant problem to study if quantum theory is or is not the optimal GPT of nature, but it seems very natural that if one is trying to prove that there are some quantum systems that perhaps will not obey our quantum physics as we were describing with Hilbert spaces and finite dimensions, but there actually might be some systems that obey some non-trivial quantum field theories or such. Have you thought about the GPT side of a quantum field theory? I know there are some considerations in previous papers of yours as well, like in the complex versus real numbers that you guys actually consider field theories that come from real Hilbert spaces as well in the proof, I believe. But have you guys thought about quantum field theories in the sense like non-abelian gauge theories?
No, I think actually I can't say much useful to this. no, I think we have not tried to build quantum theories in that way. I mean, I can say at the moment I'm looking at trying to make explicit GPTs, at least with continuous variables, which is also something that is somehow still lacking. But yeah, I think it's far to go to GPTs for quantum field theory. So I don't think I can say much useful at this point.
Okay, but thanks. That was a great talk.
Okay, thanks so much, Miriam.